Let's do this, the Cult of Hockey podcast, by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
Well, I'm a little bit more energized tonight. I actually thought that was a really exciting game. In the end, the Oilers really, really worked hard in the last 7 minutes of the game. The irony is they had, I don't know what their Corsi was in that time, but man, they were in there, the other team's end the whole time, but they didn't get even one grade A scoring chance until the Nugent Hopkins Drysdale sequence of joy at the end of the game. So they were able to put on all that pressure, but they couldn't get anything in terms of a scoring chance, but they got that tying goal, and it was one of the happier moments of a fairly unhappy season for the Edmonton Oilers. Bruce, this is our Two Good Things, Two Bad Things, and Two Numbers podcast. What's your good thing?
Well, I got to go with that tying goal. And in fact, the play of the Oilers down the stretch and the effort they put in from about 5 or 7 minutes left, as you say. I know the shot clock with 2 minutes left in regulation read 25 Edmonton, 33 Arizona. And at the end of overtime, just 7 minutes later, or playing time later, it read 37 Edmonton, 35 Arizona. So 12 shots they got in the last 7 minutes of play, including the one that wound up in the net. And that one came after a long, hard slog, most of it along the boards where Arizona loves to play. But a few won battles. And finally, the puck on the right man's stick, Leon Draisaitl, with a second to pick out his target and zip, laser of a pass right onto the tape of Ryan Nugent Hopkins, who was able to cash his own rebound with just 11 seconds left and at least cash 1 point out of a possible two on the night. But that certainly was the high point of the night, obviously.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And it couldn't happen to two of my more favorite players. And I know Draisaitl gets some heat because of his defensive play. We're going to get into that. But, man, the guy can make a play. He has just got such great hands.
That pass.
And Nuge, when I see Nuge 3-on-3, it's just so, it's thrilling to see his skill in that situation. It makes me wonder, like, if he had played in the 80s or the 70s in a more wide-open game, man, that would have been nice to see. It's just such a tight – it is such a tight checking game right now. Yeah. They're just on each other. There's lots of chances in the modern
game. In this game, there was. It was a weird game because it seemed like for long stretches there wasn't a hell of a lot happening.
Yeah.
And then I look at your chance summary, 17-13. That's a pretty high number of chances by the two teams in one game.
That's extremely high. So my good thing, Bruce, is related to the chances.
Arizona.
That's it. One of those. Arizona put 17 chances on the grade A chances of the Oilers net. Koskinen let in just two of them. He was fantastic.
He had a great game.
He looked earlier this year. I mean, I'm hoping this is the real Mikko Koskinen. There's been a couple games where there's a few weird ticks with him. He was letting in a lot of shots, high glove side for a while there. And on the power play, it was especially bad. And then he's had a little bit of trouble with plays coming from behind the net too. But man, that guy can cover he covers the bottom of the net well. And, obviously I'm an Oilers fan, so I'm hopeful that he's going to turn out to be a good goalie.
Wow. We're all. If I was a praying man, I would be praying for that because they're certainly locked into him now for the foreseeable future.
Ain't that the truth?
So, but I am hoping and wishing that that's how it turns out because they're married for the next few years here.
Yeah, and I mean, like, this is the interesting thing. Like, I know there's a lot of criticism of that signing, and I get it. And their way clearly was an overpay, quite a bit of an overpay. That said, I mean, I'm glad they're going to have him back next year. I think he's played well enough to warrant a contract and another try for next year. And the other issue is like this idea of trading away Cassian or Benning that I hear about. It's like, okay, who better are you going to get for that amount of money than Cassian or Benning? I mean, you need real NHL players on this team next year. You could trade Zach Cassian away for a second pick maybe even. But You know, he can play hockey, and so can Matt Benning. So I'm not in favor of this idea. Yeah, if you can dump some of the guys who can't play, by all means. But I'm kind of on the fence with Chris Russell. He's the only one who can play that I'm still on the fence with, because he does have 2 years left. He is getting older, and there are a lot of young defensemen. They're going to have to make room for Caleb Jones. So, and Andre Sekera sure looked good tonight too, Bruce. That's my other good things were Sekera and Colby Cave both looked really, I thought Colby Cave's looking like a fourth line NHL center.
He's looking like an NHLer for sure.
Yeah. And Sekera passed his first test. Mm-hmm. He had one shaky moment.
The 2-1 goal, right?
Yeah. Wasn't mostly his fault on that goal. He was part of the problem on that goal, but, there was other people who were bigger culprits on it, but I thought Sekera he's looking better to me in terms of his skating than he's looked all year, mm-hmm. or excuse me, all last year.
Yeah, no doubt.
So, cause last year he had that knee brace, he was skating on one leg and he didn't look good at all. So what's your bad thing, Bruce?
Well, the elephant in the room was the absence of the great Connor McDavid from this game, due to illness. And this has become a recurring theme with this player that's starting to disturb me a little bit. Last year, you'll recall, he had a stretch of 4 or 5 or 6 weeks where they were saying he was under the weather, he was missing practice, this and that. He never actually missed any games. This year, he was reported under the weather in October, November, December. He missed one game in there. Tonight, he missed another game now in February. So it seems to be a recurring issue. And I mean, I know guys get sick, but how often do they miss games? Anyway, the Oilers obviously missed him in this game. And for a long time there, at the end of the second period, I was saying to my wife, this 1-0 deficit looks like a mountain. Like, who in the hell is going to score?
Hey there. It's your son, eh?
Yep.
So Bruce, come on. He's not just any man. He just doesn't get any man cold. He gets the superstar man cold. All right. So just take it easy on him. And the other,
it's a bad thing. I'm not at him. I'm just kind of a little bit concerned.
Well, you know what? The other thing is they had him out at the mall the other day and he's meeting and probably shaking hands with 10,000 people. I hope they had the hand sanitizer there, but I mean, how many times can you put the hand sanitizer on your hand? I don't know if that's guaranteed you're going to get you're going to catch the flu day, but that's as good as anything for pressing that much flesh. You're coming in contact with a lot of germs. That's all I'm saying, Bruce.
Okay. Well, one of them seemed to have found a home because no Connor tonight. So, I mean, the good thing, I guess, is they were able to squeeze a point in a game that he wasn't playing, but they sure did miss him. And I missed him too. It was, made the game less interesting to watch, frankly.
The Howie Morenz of the modern game, Connor McDavid. Oh,
go there.
Yeah. I have a tragic ending that story. Let's not go there. But it was a pretty damn good story while it lasted, Howie Morenz. All right.
Mitchell Meteor.
The Mitchell Meteor. The Stratford.
Streak. Yeah, he had a couple of nicknames, that guy.
Yeah. And when I read about how Morenz played the game, it makes me think of McDavid, the mm-hmm. way he plays the game. And, you know, McDavid isn't like Gretzky. He's not like Lemieux. You can think of Bure and players like that, but you know, he's just bigger than they were. I guess right. Morenz wasn't big for his time. All right. My bad thing is Milan Lucic on the top line. So Draisaitl starts the game on a top line with Zach Cassian and Milan Lucic. How is that going to work? How is that going to work? And I know, Bruce, there's not a lot of alternatives, but, you know, there's Ty Ratty can score. You just brought up the hottest scorer in the AHL to the NHL. Why not roll the dice on him? Why do you have to go with the veterans all the time? You know, the veterans who you know. Like, I'm not against Cassian there, but Lucic, you just know he can't handle it. And, of course, by the third period, he was off that line. And this was after some terrible moments in the defensive zone.
Nearly scored, eh?
Lucic.
Right away, early in the game, he nearly scored.
Yeah.
And then after that, he wasn't really a big factor. But he did. Yeah, he didn't finish the play, but
yeah,
he did the right thing. He went hard to the net. He deflected the the hard pass on goal, and goalie made a good stop.
Yeah, I got nothing against Milan Lucic going hard in the net on the fourth line and being that player. Mm-hmm. But that's the player he is now. And I just dread the thought of another coach coming in who wants heavy hockey and puts him on the second line, or the second line, or the third line next year. He's just not up to it anymore. Maybe a third line, maybe, if you had the right center on that line. Lucic could still play on the third line. But, man, I just do not like him seeing him with skill players anymore. And I can't believe that we're still seeing it, Bruce. Like, honestly, how many years are we into this? Like, it's this
3 out of 7.
Yeah. And we're a year, more than a year and a half into his extended slump. Come on, guys. Like, just figure it out. They're so conservative. They got to go with the veteran. You can't have Curry up there on that spot with Draisaitl.
You might make a mistake, David.
Like Lucic, this is the thing. If he was solid defensively against top competition, I wouldn't be beaking off, but he's not.
Yeah, well, by the end of the game, third period, they wound up putting Nuge and Draisaitl together, which was more or less sewered the other lines, because, of course, tonight they were missing one of their big three. So they were mighty shy on depth of talent. So, I mean, in some ways, I'm impressed they were able to hang around and come on as hard as they did in the third. But
well, that line got both goals, of course, right?
Yeah, of course.
Now, I'm going to get to my number, Bruce, because it plays into this. This is the problem with the Oilers is to get any offense, they need to move Draisaitl to the wing. You move Draisaitl to the wing enough, though, and he forgets how to play center in his own zone. And I know a lot of people are on his case about defensive play. And again, there was a couple goals tonight. Was he in on Bolton? No, yeah.
He was in on all of the goals, one way or another.
Yeah. So on the first goal, it's his man creep. Oh, what was the first one? No, that was in the second one, it was his man creeping down from the point, and he doesn't cover his man, and his man's in on that goal. But it's on the first goal, he's blowing the zone early, like he's a winger. Like he's on the attack even before the puck's out of the end, when he should be back as a center helping out those defense. And the Oilers are caught 3-on-2 down low, and there's a rebound, and it goes in the open net. And Draisaitl's just, he's not there. He's the center. He should be there, and he's not there. So I just think it's – obviously there's an upside of playing him on the wing. With other skilled players, you're going to score some goals. But the downside is that Draisaitl is, I think, a confused player on defense right now. And he doesn't know – his assignment isn't automatic to him. His reads aren't automatic.
Right. That's fair.
And that's a very difficult thing for it's just got to be automatic. And his automatic read is right now to play wing on defense. And it's causing trouble when he gets back at center.
So what was the number in there? Did I miss it?
7 and 4. Mm-hmm. He was in on 7 grade A scoring chances, and he made mistakes on 4 against.
Those are big numbers on both sides of the puck.
Yeah, a high event night for Draisaitl. He was fantastic. That's fantastic on the attack. It's just great. He's a great attacker, and he's a great player. I think he's going to be a great two-way player. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't become a great two-way player until he gets a position, stays in a position that I think that position is center. I've always said this. And so they got to find some wingers, I guess, so they can make that happen, because I understand the temptation of the coaches as well. What's your number?
I'm going to go with two numbers, 3 and 15. And they both have to do with empty net situations. And they're both high numbers for the Oilers. The 15 is the number of empty net goals that they've allowed this year, which is just atrociously high number. 15 empty netters against. And a lot of them have been on nights where they pull the goalie and like the puck immediately goes into their net within 10 seconds. Last game, it was 4 seconds. Literally, Koskinen played 59-56 in the game, and he gave in an empty netter because he went to the bench, and New York, was it, got the puck and fired it 180 feet into the empty net instant. So sometimes the Oilers just drive me crazy with their utterly pathetic 6-on-5 play. And yet the 3 is the number of times that they've actually connected for a game tying goal. I'm not just talking about, you know, a consolation one that cuts a 2-goal deficit, but the real one that matters, which is the tying goal with the goalie on the bench. So 3 times they've done it now, which has earned them 5 points. They won the first 2 of those overtime shootout games in St. Louis. And what was the other one against whoever they beat, Florida here last month when they tied it with 8 seconds left. That time, Dreisaitl to McDavid. Tonight, Dreisaitl to Nugent Hopkins, 11 seconds left, and they salvaged another point and had many, many chances to earn that second point. Like, literally, those tying goals are worth 1.5 standing points just by average, because one of the two teams is going to get the third point in overtime, and half the time it's going to be your team. So those are the biggest goals. So it's just a cost of doing business, I guess. You pull the goalie, you take your chances, and the Oilers are high event, kind of Dreisaitl-like in terms of that both ends of the ice. It either goes in their net, or at least sometimes they actually score, which for years there, they almost never scored. They had entire seasons where they never scored a tying goal even once with the netminder on the bench. So those 3... That's the good and bad out of the numbers. But yeah, I'd rather have 3-15 than 0-0, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I'll take that.
You're going to lose all the games where there's zeros.
I'll take that as well. I got a funny story. So I coach 2 bantam teams, a boys team and a girls team, my son's and my daughter's team. And the boys team, when I pull the goalie, it's just like business as usual. But when I pull it on the girls team, they all freak out. Not all of them, but almost all of them. They just
try playing goal?
No, they just hate it when I do it.
Okay.
We're down 2 goals. We're down a goal. They just hate it. And I don't know if they don't watch a lot of NHL hockey.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like there's an NHL team in Edmonton that would really capture the attention of young people right now. So maybe they don't watch a lot of NHL hockey.
Ouch.
And just realize how standard a tactic that is. But it's really funny, man. They just I talked my own daughter off the ledge, so she no longer freaks out about it, but she did a few years ago. But yeah, there's just this huge adverse reaction on the bench whenever I pull that goalie. So
wow.
It's a controversial tactic in hockey, Bruce. But it does
at least work. Sometimes it works.
It works. It's the most euphoric moment.
Pretty much.
In a NHL game for the home team, you know, to score that tying goal with the goalie pulled. And you know, the overtime goal, I guess, is the only thing that beats it. But I love it when the Oilers do well, and it's just so painful because I'm like you, I'm just expecting any second for the other shoe to drop, and the team to bank it in off Oscar Klefbom's head from center ice or something like that, because mm-hmm. it's always something.
Yep. Well, the Oilers have won. The Oilers have got 5 points in their last 14 home games, and 3 of them have come as a result of goals in the last few seconds of play to tie games. One that they won, one that they lost. And they won 1 clean game in their last 14 home games.
5 points in their last 14 home games?
2-11-1. 11 regulation losses. Tonight was the first time they lost that they actually got a point in that skein.
Oh, man. Just think if they even got a point a game, you know.
Oh, I know.
That is so pathetic.
God. I wrote about this in the game day today.
I saw that.
The average team is running a 600 points percentage at home, and the Oilers were at 700 through mid-December, but now they're down to 450. Something, and basically they left 9 points on the table, and they're only 7 points out of the playoffs. So it's their home woes. Like if they were just an average team at home, they'd have 9 more points than they do.
Well, here's one for you, Bruce. This is the first time since early May 2017 playoffs that the Oilers have had those six defensemen who were such
a backbone
of that team together on the ice and healthy, healthy-ish. Because I'm starting to think maybe Sekera's healthy. I'm starting to get my hopes up. So that's, if you're looking for a cause for any cause for hope,
they had, they finally had the chances.
They gave up 17 grade A chances, but a lot of that wasn't on them. A lot of that was on the forwards. I will venture to say. And so anyway, that's a little bit of good news. Let's see how this, if they can get cooking. I mean, I don't think they're in the, like, I know Drew Remender and the other people are talking about if they can just win.
Well, they got to talk about it because they got to try and keep the audience coming back.
But yeah, they're not in the playoff.
Right. I'd like to hear what they say on a hot mic sometime when they.
Probably what we were able to say because we're just fans sitting at home. not paid by Rogers Sportsnet, which is in business with the NHL. All right, Bruce.
All right, David. Back to the grade. Back to the grades I go. This is a.
What number are you on?
I think I'm up to number 8.
Well, I'll just rush through.
Yeah, it's kind of a grind tonight. The game was kind of, not nondescript, but it wasn't really all that structured. So there was lots of kind of odd stuff. Anyway, it's a long season. Let's put it that way.
You know that Colby Cave, Bruce, is the first fourth line Oilers center that I've liked in, I don't know, forever.
I'm very impressed. We'll see how long it lasts. Obviously, so is Ken Hitchcock. He had him out there in overtime, and he almost scored. He got a breakaway.
He's showing increased confidence.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's a third line center, but I think at least the Oilers may have a fourth line center. And who knows, Bruce? Excuse me. If Jujhar Kara continues to take steps as an NHL player, he may be their third line center. So maybe they have their center positions. Of course, they could go with the big three, McDavid, Draisaitl, and Nugent Hopkins as three centers, and then Cave as your fourth line center. So there's a number of solutions. Because when you look at their list of needs, it'd be nice if third line center wasn't on that list. I mean, I'd be okay if they said our third line center is Cooper Marody next year. You know, go with a young guy who's dominating at the AHL level instead of bringing in some useless older player that we've seen lots of, that kind of thing. So
Colby Cave is striking me as not useless.
Yeah.
He's got a fair amount of game. Like, I don't think he's a great skater, but he's hard on the puck and he's a pain in the butt in the offensive zone on the other team. Like, he's all over the puck.
He's just the kind of guy that I would think that's who you want to populate your fourth line with. Mm-hmm. Guys are about 24, 25, 26. Who have dominated the AHL level, who are extremely hungry to make it in the NHL, and they're cheap. Mm-hmm. And that should be this. I don't know why they're bringing in older players for those roles, but more expensive players. Brodziak is more expensive than, you know, you can get these guys for $700,000 a year, $800,000 a year.
Maybe Colby Cave is Chiarelli's great parting gift to the organization that he stole in waivers from his old club. Maybe.
I would say parting gift. Great might be a little bit much, but let's go with great. Let's go with parting gift. Maybe you're right, though, because maybe he can play. Guys like that come in and they can show they can play, and he's been getting trending up. So it's
liking good. What I'm seeing, I got to say. And there's several games in a row now that he's impressed me in a positive way, which is a nice sign. Like, everybody has a good game once in a while.
Yeah.
Almost everybody.
We're in Camp Cave. All right. Thanks, Bruce.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.